This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are here live on Pet Life Radio and Instagram, here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill, here every week, except last week I wasn't here. Hope you didn't miss me that much. But I was at the American Vet Med Association conference. It was great. And I learned a few things that I believe we can talk about that as well. So I just want to wait for a couple of you to start joining on. All right. Hello there, Switchplate Lady. All right. Hello, hello. And so those of you who might be new here to me on Instagram and on Pet Life Radio, basically you get to ask anything. Steph, how you doing? You can ask anything. We'd love to hear from you. And JB, how are you? So B, how you doing? I'm going to have to pretty much end a little bit on time today, only because it's one of my granddaughter's 11th birthday. So my daughter, her mom, is having everybody over for brunch. So anyway, but I'm always late. I joke, I'm going to be late to my own funeral. So what can I tell you? So what do they say? Better late than never. So that's the situation here with me. All right. So any questions you have, now's a good time to ask. So one of the things I wanted to talk about, I'm always, go on to the AVMA, the American Vet Med Association Smart Brief. And the whole idea is that I want to, if I can find new things to share with you. And you can't teach an old dog new tricks, because I learned a few things as well. And one of my good friends, Dr. Richard Forbes, he's a professor emeritus at North Carolina State University, a true gem. He's a great guy. And now that he's retired from, day to day. Oh, Zena's doing better. Good. I'm glad. Steve, how are you? I'll see you at 11 o'clock. So one of the things that we do, a bunch of us from our high school class, I went to Beverly Hills High. Very unique. It really is, because we have a group of us that stay really close together, talk all the time. Anyway, anytime there's someone's birthday, and today it's our friend Gene, one of our classmates, a bunch of us get together for a Zoom call. We spend on that, half hour, an hour sometimes on the phone, just shooting the breeze and all wishing Gene a happy birthday. And usually it's one, but in December, five of us have birthdays in December. So instead of having 5 weeks of doing, we always pick a Sunday closest to the birthday. And anyway, so it's really cool. So obviously Steve, not only my brother-in-law, but one of my classmates, we're going to see him at 11. So one of the things that what I learned on this at the meeting is Dr. Ford's expertise. He's a board certified veterinary internal medicine specialist, but his thing is vaccines. And he's very, very knowledgeable. And we were just going through all the different vaccines. And he, like I, are, we don't think that every dog on the planet needs every vaccine. I like to customize vaccines based on lifestyle, based on the likelihood of getting the disease that you're vaccinating against, the ramifications of the vaccine itself compared to the disease. And he and I are off on the same page, which is great. So one of the things we talked about is there's a vaccine that's gained a lot of attention lately for influenza. We all know the Bordetella. Bordetella is everywhere. People say, it was called the kennel cough shot. Hey, Deb, that was easy to say. That was kennel cough shot. And then all of a sudden you're hearing people say, I never take my dog to a kennel. Oh, you don't. But, the dog stays in your backyard the whole time? No, we walk in the neighborhood. We go here. He goes to the groomer. He goes to the dog park once a week, whatever. And I sort of changed the name of the Bordetella or kennel cough vaccine to live in LA cough vaccine, because our lifestyles, and many people have lifestyles that they're very outdoorsy. I say, let's go to the dog park cough, go to the groomer cough, go to the Third Street Promenade cough, go to the Grove cough, go to the Rodeo Drive cough. I mean, it's everywhere. So we still recommend that the vaccine, the Bordetella. Influenza now has joined. There's a whole group of vaccines. It's the IRDC, Canine Infectious Respiratory Disease Complex. It's a complex. It's not just one bacterium or one virus. It's a group of them. In that group is influenza. Now, the parainfluenza, the P, when your dog gets the DA2PP vaccine, all right, that one P is for parvo. The second P is for parainfluenza. So that's already included. What about influenza? So there are two very common influenza bugs, the different species, if you will, of the vaccine. And one is called the H3N2, and one is the H3N8. Well, what I learned from Dr. Ford is H3N8, don't waste your money, don't waste your time, don't get the bivalent vaccine that has both. You don't need it. In the United States, we have not had an H3N8 breakout in who knows how many years. So again, since less is more when it comes to vaccines, why give a vaccine that there's no way that they're going to get the disease? So now tell your veterinarian or ask your veterinarian, is it the H3N2 by itself or is it combined? Because of course the combined is going to be more expensive and you don't need it. I just learned this. So I already told our gals at the office that does the ordering, no more H3N8. We just need a flat H3N2. If you have any questions, trouble remembering that, just reach out to me. H3N2 is the only one we need. And also, a couple of reminders when it comes to vaccines. They also recommend there's a new technology out there. Now, it's not the mRNA. We all agree that there are some issues with mRNA vaccines, just like with people, just like with the COVID vaccine. Probably not a good idea. However, recombinant technology. So recombinant is the way to go. And there are a lot of new vaccines on the market that use recombinant technology. They may be a little bit more expensive, but you might want to ask your veterinarian, are that the regular, if you'll see a little R before the vaccine, that's recombinant. That technology is well accepted. It is safe. It is more effective. And that is one thing they're recommending as well. So we just literally, the last time we just did ordering, since going to Dr. Ford's sessions, we are now in my hospital using wherever we can, wherever it's available, recombinant technology. And it's not that much more expensive. It might be $1, $2 more expensive. Well worth it. And one last thing about vaccines. Vanderpump has a question. Let's go ask that. Question of the dog, progressive pulmonary hypertension. What are your thoughts on oxygen therapy? I mean, first of all, you can do oxygen therapy, but you want to have the pet, the dog on sildenafil. And those of you who don't know what sildenafil is, you do know, you've heard of it, you just don't know it as sildenafil, you've heard it as Viagra. Well, believe it or not, Viagra is very effective for pulmonary hypertension. And when dogs are on it, definitely should be on sildenafil. And many of the dogs that have heart disease also will have pulmonary hypertension. This is why it's so important when it comes to diagnosing heart disease in animals, is that we no longer stop at x-rays and ECG, electrocardiogram. What we need is an echocardiogram. You want an ultrasound of the heart. The measurements, the ability to make a direct definitive diagnosis and identify exactly what problems the heart is experiencing, you cannot see on an x-ray. All you can see on an x-ray is the overall size. You can't tell from that size how much of it is thick wall, how much of it is enlarged chamber with a normal wall. All you see is a big heart. Well, there's a lot more to it. And you can't see blood flow. You can't measure pressure of the blood. You can't make a diagnosis of pulmonary hypertension with an x-ray or with an EKG or ECG. So the new standard, minimum standard, is echocardiography. Now, is it more expensive? Yes. Is it worth it? Yes. Now, some GPs can do it. There are some companies out there. I've worked with one where you can log in and they real time can watch you with the probe, directing you where to put the probe, all right, the echo probe. And then they make the reading and make the diagnosis and the treatment plan. So it's really cool. Again, it's not just anytime you want. You got to set it up in advance. But that is an alternative, but definitely should have an echocardiogram. That is the way to make the diagnosis. And for pulmonary hypertension, again, check with your veterinarian about oxygen. And also what you can do with oxygen therapy is see, do you see an improvement? Technically, you should see an improvement, but the treatment to help the actual hypertension is going to be sildenafil. All right. Is Benadryl okay? Time for itching for a 25-pound dog. He has been an appointment to see you next Monday. Okay. So the answer is yes and no. Now, the Benadryl is an antihistamine. Histamine does not play a major role at all in canine allergy. There's a small amount. So yes, it'll help a little. The reason why I like Benadryl when I recommend it, or the chlorpheniramine when I recommend it, is these are the two old-fashioned antihistamines. What does an old-fashioned antihistamine do? Well, let's put it this way. What are the new ones? Okay, Zyrtec, right? How do they define themselves in their commercials? All right, so these are the ones that don't cause sedation. So therefore, if you're going to take Zyrtec, what they're recommending is it's good for as an antihistamine, but it's non-drowsy. We don't want the drowsy. Well, guess what? If you have a dog that's miserable and scratching too much, you know what? I like the drowsy. So I like the Benadryl. The dose is 1 mg/lb. So a 25-pound dog, give 25 milligrams. It should, if nothing else, it may help a little bit with the actual histamine release if there that is even a problem in this case, but it will cause a little drowsiness. So Claritin, Zyrtec, they may not help. They'll help for the if there is a histamine problem, they will help. They're effective antihistamines, but you know what? I kind of like the drowsy. All right. Chizoxidonafil and amlodipine, okay? Amlodipine is for overall blood pressure, which is good. So then I would recommend this. You already see what she's like on the sildenafil. So now what you want to do is let's try some oxygen therapy. And if you see a dramatic improvement, then there's your answer. It may not help. You may get as much as you're going to get just with sildenafil and amlodipine. So you're decreasing the general blood pressure, that's amlodipine, and the hypertension, pulmonary hypertension, sildenafil. So that could help. All right. Nalani, let's see, Vanderpump. Just so because she had a syncope episode. Ah, okay. Well, so syncope is fainting. And when these dogs have these problems and faint, why are they fainting? What are they lacking? Lacking oxygen. So in that case, very likely, you might hopefully will get some help on some oxygen therapy. The problem with that is you're not going to keep the dog on oxygen all the time. Now you can get online, you can get these mini oxygen tanks and a little mask, and you can administer the oxygen at home. But what we found is sometimes that dogs need oxygen so badly that they need to be in an oxygen cage or an oxygen tank, right? Then as soon as you take them off, or if they get excited or whatever, then they might have a problem. Also, one thing I've noticed is high altitude. You should be very careful, very cautious. If you have a dog with one such problem and you like to go up into the mountains, don't take the dog. I've heard many cases, like, you know, going to Big Bear, going to Lake Arrowhead, going into a Mammoth. These dogs really don't do well at high altitude. Of course they're not, because the air is thin. So you just want to make keep them at home. My dog had titrated Semra Parvo a few years back and had antibodies. How long does that last? That is a great question. And the answer is nobody knows. What I recommend in cases like that every maybe 2 years, the vaccine itself we know is good for 3. When you do a test, and I am a major proponent of titering for when it comes to distemper and parvo, because I don't love the vaccine unless you need it. And then that goes in general. Why give a vaccine if it's not necessary? So yes, I'm a big fan of the titers. But the thing is, we don't know. You could take it. You're just getting, let's say you take the titer test. It's the tail end of its efficacy. And within 3 or 4 months, you don't have protection anymore. I'm not expecting you to take a test every 3 or 4 months, maybe not even once a year. I just tell clients, if it's been a while, then maybe could do it every year. But, you know, let's talk about titers, for example. In fact, I'm going to leave you hanging. I want to talk about people and rabies titers and my personal experience. And we're going to have you keep you hanging. We're going to come back right after these words from our sponsors. So don't go away.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
All right. We are back here live on both. So the comment is on these titer tests. And the answer is, we don't know. So the only way to find out is to continually test. So here's the thing. As a incoming veterinary student, it was obligatory. We all had to get rabies vaccines. And back then, it was going back, let me see, I'm out almost 43. So, I mean, 46, 47 years ago. And we all had to get vaccines. Rabies vaccines, because of course, the possibility is a veterinary student is dealing with an animal that might have had rabies. It's just our protection. I get it. So we got our rabies shots. They say in a human, rabies shots are good for about 10 years. All right, so let's fast forward, not 10, not 15, not 20, 25 years later, I was at a conference, actually the AVMA, the American Vet Med Association, the same conference that I just came back from. I believe it was, let's see, 1994. It was a long time ago. Let's put it that way. And so it was in Minneapolis, I believe, and there was a little booth that we can get a rabies titer. Look, as we know, doctors are the worst patients. I am one of those worst patients. So I did not have never really gotten a, who cared? I'm working small animal. I'm not getting rabies. I'm not worried about it. So I never even cared about it. But I said, you know what? Getting a blood test, because I'm a terrible patient. I don't go to the doctor myself. Let me just see how I look when I, you know, my blood test. There was a little box that you can check. It's an extra for, I don't know, 30, 40 bucks to do a rabies titer. So I said, yeah, I'm just curious. It's been so long. I'm not expecting it to be. I don't need it anymore, but I'm just curious. After 25 years of vaccine that's only good for 10, supposedly, I still had a high titer. And that just shows you that some of these dogs from their early vaccines will never need it again, which is interestingly one of the things that Dr. Ford told us about the feline leukemia vaccine. Not only do I not recommend it regularly for indoor cats, unnecessary. And even if they want me, yeah, just in case he gets out. If he gets out one night, either he's going to get hit by a car, okay? He's going to be mauled by a rabid animal. Or if he's going to come back, he's going to be gone for a night or two or three. In order for a cat, an adult cat, to get leukemia, it has to be prolonged direct contact with a leukemia-positive cat. We're talking cats that are grooming each other, eating with each other, sleeping together. That's how it happens. Incidental contact with a street cat is not going to give your cat leukemia. And therefore, since I'm worried about feline vaccine-induced or feline vaccine-associated sarcoma, which is that cancer from a vaccine, why would I want to give one of the two vaccines that are most often implicated, that's leukemia, and the second, rabies? Guess what? Those are two vaccines that they're never going to get the disease if they're indoor only. So I don't give them. I don't support them. I don't do it. One interesting thing that Dr. Ford said, for adult cats, they are most likely, from even if they had it as a kitten, they're after 2 or 3 years of age, they probably don't need it anymore. And I remember, interestingly, a conversation I had with one of the vaccine gurus here in LA, Dr. Gene Dodds. And we were talking about the necessity of having an adult cat that's going to be indoor, outdoor. That cat was already like 15 years of age. And do we need to vaccinate it? And she says, Jeff, no. If this cat, 15 years of age, has not gotten it yet, the disease or the vaccine, what are you worried about? Clearly, this cat's own immunity is fine. And that's what we learned. So for me, that's the answer. That's where we're at with the vaccines. So I'm not a big fan. The titers, I don't have an answer. The only way to get an answer is maybe every year, every 2 years, if you still want to do it, just do a titer. Look, I've done, you know, I'm a titer fan, and I've had cases where we do a titer. It could be 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, and they finally are low and need a boost. And that's the ones I boost. So that's what I always tell people. Do the titer. It's more specific medicine. It's eliminating or reducing, I should say, better word, the potential problems associated with a vaccine. And again, what we learn about the vaccines, which is no secret to me or others, the one vaccine, canine vaccine, that seems to produce the most common aggressive side effect, it's only temporary, so not to worry, is lepto. So the lepto vaccine, first of all, it's not a virus, it's a bacterium. And it's whether how they make it, usually what we know and what we want to avoid as best we can when it comes to vaccines are the adjuvants and the preservatives. The adjuvant is the liquid that goes into the making of the vaccine that makes it, you know, last, et cetera, and the preservatives. Pure antigen does not cause a reaction. As a matter of fact, according to a human, or I should say an MD immunologist, of course he was human, an MD immunologist, the body can handle millions of antigens on a regular basis. So when you inject with an antigen, that's not the problem. When they get the reaction, the vaccine reaction, it's because the other things that went into the manufacture, the development of that vaccine. Same thing with COVID. A lot of the reactions are not actually because of the COVID. It's because of everything that went into the vaccine, and which is why, which they so much stuff going on with the mRNA vaccine is because there are things in there that we don't need and can cause problems. So many of us, I personally, my own thing, call me an idiot, I will never get another COVID vaccine. But again, I don't get sick. Even when I had COVID, I was totally asymptomatic. So my immune system is actually pretty strong. I rarely get sick. And guess what? I'm going to keep it that way. So, all right. So other things to talk about. I did a story. I didn't even know if it aired yet because I never know. They ask, they call me in. I do a lot of Inside Edition for some good reason. It's good for me. I'm both New York Bureau and LA Bureau. I'm like number one on the list. If there's a pet animal story, I'm going to get a call. And I love doing stuff like that. Inside Edition is a great staff. One of the reporters that I know very well, Jimmy Murray, I'm sure if you watch Inside Edition, you've seen him. So I've known him for years. He's married to a girl that my little brother's high school classmate. I've known her. I take care of their pets for 30, 40 years, whatever it is. Anyway, I did the story with Jimmy, but it's fun working with them. I enjoy it. And the story was about a viral video of a raccoon that had something called short spine syndrome. And, you know, it's very interesting because this animal, you got to go online and look at it. It was a raccoon with short spine syndrome. And if you want to really see a better look, I went in to search it. I couldn't find any stories, anything in the literature about this being in a raccoon. Probably because raccoons, we don't see them. What's going on in nature, in the mountains, wherever they're hanging out, right? In the forests, we're not going to see them. It could be there, but no one's really found it and wrote about it. And again, I can't say it's never happened, but at least I couldn't find it in literature. However, looked into it with dogs. And looking at the dogs with this short spine syndrome, it looks exactly like the video, the body condition, the body shape. So it's basically, it's a congenital defect. There may be a hereditary component, maybe not, but all it is that in development, in the embryo, the cervical, the neck spine, starts crushing and it fuses with the thoracic spine. So now it's like a big, like a humpback of Notre Dame. All you see is this head coming out of the almost the shoulders. You don't see any neck and it's all exploded. You can't even describe it. You got to see it. Look it up. It's so amazing to see. And depending on how much of the spinal cord was affected or destroyed, these animals, they look funny as hell, but they get around, they can eat, you have to feed them. Since they can't bend their heads down, you definitely have to feed them like from a height. And they walk around, they walk funny, they look funny, but they seem happy as can be. So this raccoon also, something freaked him out. In the video, you see this running across a piece of grassy area, across like a pathway, upstairs, like it's running for help. And it's so funny to watch. And it's exactly what the dogs look like that have it. Found it very interesting. And the only thing I can tell you about it, it's rare. In fact, in dogs, in all of literature, in all these years, only 30 cases noted worldwide, not even here in the States, worldwide. So that kind of tells you it's pretty rare. So anyway, check it out. It's interesting to see. Next up, really quickly before we break, and I have to go because I said I have my granddaughter's birthday brunch, and we are going into summer. Just some ideas of some of the summer hazards, summer toxins. Number one, again, because of lifestyle and barbecuing and all that stuff, raw onions, raw garlic. If they're cooked, I mean, it's not great to have a bunch, but it's not as toxic. But definitely, you want to have your dogs, your pets avoid raw. Usually, cats are smart enough not to eat it. Dogs will eat anything. They're not that sharp when it comes to that. So raw onions, raw garlic, xylitol, artificial sweeteners. You can find it in a lot of natural sugar-free substitute products, even something like peanut butter. So if you see sugar-free or unsweetened, you want to check and see if there's xylitol. Avoid xylitol, very dangerous for our pets. Chocolate, of course, it's volume related. It's pure dark chocolate is the worst. Cocoa, pure cocoa powder is the worst. But, you know, usually milk chocolate, not as bad. White chocolate, obviously not bad at all because it's not really chocolate. But you really want to just be careful. It's a volume thing. If your dog eats a Hershey's Kiss, gets into 3 or 4 M&Ms, don't worry. It's not a problem. It's when they eat a whole bag and then I get really angry because the owner didn't offer me any of the M&Ms. And that's if a dog's getting M&Ms, wait a second, didn't you save any for me? So obviously one of my downfalls. All right, different plants, things like sago palm, the yew, oleander. Again, be really careful out there because those things in volume either can be a severe gastric irritant or actually be toxic. Sago palm, for cats, lilies. And it's not just the lily plant. If you have a vase at home and you have lilies and you water and the water goes down, and you know that little cup at the bottom that could, you know, sort of collects the excessive water. If they drink water from that little thing, that could be a killer. So my recommendation when it comes to, if you have cats, do not have lilies in the house, period. Also, speaking of toxic things, pest residues. It's we have flea sprays, you have fly sprays, you have, you know, household products for whatever it is. Again, dogs will get into them and they will try to lick. They don't know. A lot of dogs, certainly special breeds, certain breeds, they basically lick or eat first and ask questions later. So you got to be really careful. Lastly, beaches. Be really careful with ocean water, drinking too much water, ocean water. And if they're swimming, trust me, they are getting that salt water, can cause salt toxicity. It is very potentially dangerous. It can cause brain swelling, severe GI signs. You want to be careful. And sand. Well, you say, well, my dog doesn't eat sand. No, they don't. But guess what? When you're playing frisbee or however they're chasing that ball and it gets saliva and it's rolling, it's getting sand, they pick it up. They are eating sand. And too much will give something called sand impaction. And think about when you're playing and you're making a sandcastle. What do? You go down towards the water and you get that thick, whooshy sand and you get to clump it together, right? And it holds its shape. That's what's happening inside a dog's stomach and intestine if they eat too much sand. And that is often a surgical disease. The only way to get that impacted sand out, it's causing a blockage. You got to go in after it. So be really careful. If you are going to play around with your dogs in the beach, make sure every throw, try to get a dry ball and brush the sand off and just be really, really careful out there. All right. Anyway, have a great week, everybody. We will see you here next week, same bat time, same bat channel, here on Pet Life Radio, here on Instagram Live. And if you have any questions during the week, you know how to get a hold of me, very easy, here on Instagram. It's just Werbs_DBM. For those of you, I see a lot of new faces here. Please tell your friends. We'd love to have them join us on the show. So very, very important. And looking forward to seeing you next week. Have a great week, everybody.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.